not proud, but that was me. And when I face it, I take back a little dignity. Not looking for excuses, I just want to be free from power. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bubble Hour, where real people tell real stories of addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Jean McCarthy. I write the blog Unpickled. I've been telling my story there of life after alcohol since my first day of sobriety in 2011. I tell my stories there, and I invite you to share your stories here. And today is an international episode of the Bubble Hour. My guest Tina lives in Sweden, and we managed to connect across the miles. It's bedtime for her and lunchtime for me. And we managed to do the math properly so that we both got on the line at the same time. It was a modern miracle. And we're going to jump right into it and hear all about recovery in Sweden and also Tina's insights on her culture shock of experiencing some recovery culture here in North America when she visited LA earlier this year. So, Tina, welcome to the Bubble Hour.
Thank you so much. I'm super, super excited to finally... I've been dreaming about this day.
So tell me how long you've been listening to the show. When did you discover recovery podcasts, and how does it fit into your experience?
I was thinking about this the other day, and I was trying to recollect how I actually found you, but I don't remember, probably Google or something like that, but it was just before I stopped drinking, so it probably was at the end of 2015, I think.
Well, let's go back before I'll ask you more questions about that, but let's go back to what was going on for you at that time. Tell me about your relationship with alcohol sort of before it became, you realized it was problematic and how you identified that something needed to change.
Sure. I'll go through my journey so far. I'll go back at the beginning and just whiz through my life. I am not Swedish, even though I live in Sweden. I am from Norway. I was born in a small coastal town in Norway. I grew up with a mom and a dad. They are still together. And I have a younger brother. I had a good childhood, I think, with lots of friends. That's where I remain close to still. I didn't grow up around alcohol. There's no alcoholics like that I know of in our family. My family did drink, but I was... special occasions, weekends, things like that. I have been suffering from panic attacks all my life, and I had my first panic attack when I was about 10 years old, and I've had them ever since. And I think that has done something to me regarding my drinking behavior. I didn't touch alcohol during high school. I had a lot of friends, but was quite, I was a little bit of an outsider too. My interest didn't really fit in with a small town, so I couldn't actually wait to leave. I was also at that time coming to terms with the fact that I am gay. After high school, I attended a one-year film and TV course at a free school, which is a one-year school where you can focus on your interests. And this is where I started drinking, interestingly enough. I didn't touch alcohol until I was 19. That was an alcohol pop, as we call it, over here. And I really liked the buzz. In Norway, just for reference, you can drink beer and wine from the age of 18, same in Sweden, and spirits from the age of 20. In my new environment, the students were very, very free-spirited, and I felt that I finally could be myself more and more. After that, I went on to work in a production company, TV, where my drinking escalated somewhat. I loved going out clubbing in Oslo with my friends. And after finishing that apprenticeship, I decided to study TV production, and that meant that I had to move to England to study. I was a very diligent student and I only drank on weekends. But after graduation, I decided to try my luck in London and I got a job pretty much straight away in one of the biggest TV broadcasters in the UK. And now my drinking started to really take off. This was in 2001. And there was a massive work hard, play hard attitude in the media industry. And in many ways, it was totally amazing. But on the other hand, I picked up a lot of bad habits. It was absolutely normal to have a beer or a glass of wine or three for lunch. I rose quickly through the ranks. I got new and exciting jobs with different companies and ended up working many years for Disney. I also went through a bad breakup and I met my now girlfriend. When I think about it, it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly where it started to really go downhill. But I think it was in my late 20s and early 30s. I'm 41 years old now, just turned. My panic attacks started to get more frequent. I worked very hard, but I suffered also badly from imposter syndrome and never feeling good enough and had very low self-esteem when it came to my job. During this time, my partner and I went through years of IVF as well without any results. So this was obviously an extremely hard blow to realize that we would never have kids of our own. And I think that this also perpetuated my drinking. Then in my late 30s, things really took a turn for the worse. I started getting more and more blackouts, basically every time I drank, even if it was just like one glass or if it was five bottles of wine, I still had blackouts. I've had blackouts for years before that, but never this frequent. And I remember talking to some of my friends about it, and to my then huge, big surprise, they never had blackouts. And I think that kind of... That made me think. I thought that was weird. December 2015, we had just left England for good after living in England for 17 years. And we moved to the Swedish countryside where I still work and live. I was doing some freelance work still in London, so I was traveling a lot then as well. And I went that December, I went to a party and I fell out with one of my best friends. I, to this day, do not know what happened. I had a blackout, I know that, but we didn't speak for about 6 months. That was his choice, and that shocked me to the core, I would say. And that December, I started to drink at lunchtime on my own, which is something I'd never done before. That Christmas, back home in Sweden, I had my whole family staying over. And I woke up on Christmas Day so hungover. So the first thing I did at 9 o'clock in the morning was to pour myself a strong G&T in secret and drank that. So these things started to add up in my head and I got scared. But at the same time, I thought, this is normal for me now. I'm sure a lot of other people do this at Christmas. But I think there must have been something inside me that knew that this isn't normal. And I had tried to moderate way before, like for many, many years, 10, 15 years, and obviously never worked. So after Christmas 2015, and just before the new year, I decided to quit drinking. So silly when I think about it, but like that week in between Christmas and New Year's, I drank like so much. And January the 1st, 2016, I went cold turkey and I have not touched a drink since. So that means that last week was actually my sober anniversary over 3 years.
Oh, congratulations. Can you believe it?
No.
3 years sounds like a lifetime when you're trying to quit, but have you found it's gone by quickly?
Yes. weirdly enough. And I'm just thinking back to, like, I don't know, 5 years ago when I had super big issues with, like, 7 days, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's mind-blowing. Really?
I've been jotting down questions as you're talking, but I guess one of my first questions is about how your panic attacks and feelings of imposter syndrome and some of those, like, mental health kind of concerns, or
yeah.
how have those been affected by 3 years alcohol-free?
That is a very good question. I think, well, I hoped, like during my first year sober, I hoped everything would be okay by itself. I thought all my panic attacks would go away, that I would feel better about myself, et cetera, et cetera. Not the case. I've been back and forth with counseling for many, many years. But I think because I went to counseling while I was still drinking, it didn't kind of work that well. So I found that after I started seeing, I have a cognitive behavior therapist that I go to see, and that has helped me enormously with my panic attacks. But also I can handle them in a much more clear way now than I could when I was drinking, because then I would just throw some alcohol on it and it would just perpetuate it and make it, you know, 10 times worse the next day.
Right.
So, I mean, however you twist and turn it, it's helped me both with my mental health and with my panic attacks when I stopped drinking, for sure. But I still, you know, have to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it sort of clears the air to work on things, right? Like you really see what you're actually dealing with rather than this sort of muddied mess that alcohol makes out of our feelings and our emotions and our brain's response to things. How about your relationship? Does your partner drink, and how has your relationship shifted over these last 3 years?
She's drinking. She drinks. Yes, she's a normie, as you say.
Yes.
however, her drinking has gone down massively because I've stopped drinking. I was often the kind of the instigator. And she can take it or leave it, really. I was afraid that it would kind of trigger me when she's drinking, or to have like alcohol in the house and stuff like that. But that isn't the problem for me. And I think I couldn't really have done it without her support. She's been behind me like, you know, 1,000%. And she often tells me, you know, she can tell me flat out, you know, I'm so glad you're not drinking anymore.
Did she believe you had a problem, or did you keep it hidden, or?
I'm not sure. She never said to me like you have a problem, but she has told me on numerous occasions that she thinks, you know, you drink too much, or I don't like you when you drink this much. Mm-hmm. We've had quite a lot of those conversations the day after, I don't know, some crazy night, you know. And I guess I never really took that seriously at all. And I guess, you know, people can tell you these things and you're like, oh, well, whatever.
Right.
You know, it's not that bad, or
it's their problem.
Yeah.
Deal with it. This is me.
More and we'll be on the same level. But I would also drink like way more than her. You know, she could be like, oh yeah, I'll just have 2 glasses of wine. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I'm need at least 4. So she had this stop button that I don't have. I've come to understand.
I totally understand that. It's amazing to me, actually, the way that normies drink.
It is.
I just don't understand it.
No.
I'm curious about work culture then. How have you responded to, because obviously that probably your work culture hasn't changed that much, so how have you adapted to that?
Well, that's where my cognitive behavioral therapist comes in. Basically, I have tools now to deal with stress, also I've come to understand. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's age as well. But I'm working as a freelance now. I'm not hired by one company purely, so I can kind of, I'm more of a boss of my own time, which has helped. But also, I'm much better dealing with stress, because I remember listening to the Bubble Hour, and you talked about this feeling that kind of everything is your fault. And I was suffering from that really badly. Like if somebody was like huffing and puffing in the hallway outside my office, I was like, oh, what have I done now? It must be me. I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
I had that really bad. I could get so stressed out if people didn't answer my email straight away. It's like, okay, oh no, I had to retrace my email, see what I'd said. Had I offended anyone, blah, blah, blah. So you can imagine how I was when I was drinking and had blackouts. And the day after was like, you know, pure purgatory. I mean, it was, you know, I had going through my phones, checking, calling up friends, you know, pretending that I remembered stuff. And, you know, whew, no, just talking about it kind of stresses me out. I have my tools now too, and I have these kind of, you know, little lists that I go through in my head when I feel like I'm getting revved up. That has helped me so much. And also, I think, you know, I'm starting to think more like, you know, it's only work. It's not life and death. It's not, you know, I'm working in TV. It can be rectified if something's is going wrong. And to be honest with you, most of the time, it was never really anything to do with me if something had gone wrong. So, you know, I created all these scenarios that are just crazy, really. Hmm. So that's much better now. As I said, being my own boss, you know, I can pick and choose my clients much more. Yeah.
But do you travel a lot for work? And traveling, yes, can be a real trigger for people, being alone in a hotel room, eating in restaurants, being out of your normal routine. Mm. How do you deal with those things?
Thankfully, in many ways, and this kind of ties into the drinking culture in Scandinavia, I'm not going to say it's not so readily available, but in a way it's not, because for example, here you don't have like liquor stores like you have in America. You have specifically owned shops where you can buy alcohol. Alcohol is not sold by any outlet, so to say. And these have like very regulated opening hours and things like that. So it's much harder to, you know, get your hands on something. And drinking in restaurants and pubs in Scandinavia is very, very, very expensive. So not having it so available is a good thing. But also what I do is I always try and think like I'm setting myself up for success. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to look in the minibar just to see what they have, which is like typical, you know, something I would do. Or I would not even, you know, I wouldn't check out the bar. Because I don't need to be in there. And also, thankfully, when I travel, I normally travel to like big cities like Oslo and London and Stockholm. And I have friends in all those places. So I try to keep myself busy. Because the worst thing like is, or to have like a binge on Netflix or something. Because, you know, at the moment, it's not so bad now after 3 years. But, you know, in the first like year, I thought about alcohol a lot. And it was much harder. So I just found to keep my mind occupied and, you know, exercise is my kind of golden rule, really. That's what I turn to also because it makes me feel good and it helps with anxieties and all that kind of thing. So I work out. I'm actually at the moment training for a half marathon. So these things kind of help. And running I can do anywhere.
So do you take your runners with you? We call them runners, your running shoes. Do you take them with you everywhere
always,
you go?
Always. Yeah, I do.
Do you try to stay at hotels that have a gym so that that's available to you?
Yeah, I do. And also, like, now I'm staying I stay in Airbnbs, you know, so I stay with people, which I also find is quite helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, just that people around, I'm not completely on my own, like, stuck in a room.
Well, what if they're drunkos? Do you screen them? Has that happened?
Yeah, I do screen them to a certain extent, but that actually, I haven't thought about that.
Oh, good. I'll give you something to worry about.
Just what I need, thanks.
You're welcome. I'm here to help. Well, I'm sure you have the social skills to navigate that situation too, right? You can always go for a run or stay in your room.
Exactly.
Did you make use of any recovery programs or resources when you decided to quit drinking?
I was in. I don't have any meetups or any recovery kind of steps, places or anything to go to around where I live at all. It's very, very far to go. It's at least an hour to the nearest mm-hmm. meet, and it's not feasible for me. So I had to kind of, as you said, you mentioned like patchwork recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Also
mm-hmm.
very, 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 very much my thing. So everything that's helped me, I found online. and also been reading a lot of books. But mostly it's for me, it's been like, you know, well, to be honest, you, the Bubble Hour, is like a cornerstone. There's a UK site called Soberistas, which I'm also on. And also
Soberistas.
Yeah.
Soberistas.com, I think it is.
Yeah. And also She Recovers, which I came to quite late. But She Recovers and their Facebook group. I'm not a big kind of, I don't often kind of post and or stuff like that. But for me, it's like just to know that it's there is like amazing. You know, just to know that I can like listen to some old episodes of Bubble Hour and I kind of know them quite well now. So I know which one that I need to hear. you know, that's just kind of all I need, really. Because I guess I am quite alone in the, like where I live, like there's no one like me, like that are sober, so to say. So you do end up feeling quite, you can end up feeling quite alone. But that's, you know, the online community has helped me tremendously.
It makes me wonder, you know, what would have happened to you or I 20 or 30 years ago if before the internet
yeah.
in our situation, like
yeah.
if we didn't have that lifeline to grasp mm. onto. I'm in a community where recovery programs were available to me, so I, you know, I eventually would have got to those, but I would have hit a much lower bottom.
Mm.
It's frightening to think that yeah. in isolation people die of this disease if they don't
yeah.
get the help they need.
Absolutely. I don't know what I would have done, to be honest with you. Yeah.
What's the response of the people around you when they hear you're not drinking, or is there an interest in that? Do people is your culture very stoic and you keep it to yourself? What's it like?
I would say that in Scandinavia, I can only really speak for Norway and Sweden. Denmark is slightly different because it's kind of connected to the continent. we are not so much. In Scandinavia, I would say that they are way, 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 way behind when it comes to talking about being like alcoholic abuse, substance abuse. But alcohol. It's a massive... you do not talk about it. There's not really any Scandinavian online support that are kind of cool, you know, like the Bubble Hour or She Recovers or anything like that. You don't have that.
Hey, thanks for calling me cool. I sincerely appreciate that.
so it's like it's taboo, basically. It's not to be talked about. It's funny because in my previous job where I was working before Christmas, we had this massive, kickoff party for the channel. And I went and we were sitting around the table and it was obviously free-flowing alcohol. And that's very unusual in Scandinavia because it is so expensive. So when it's free, people drink. People were trying to top me up and this guy was sitting next to me, hey, have some wine, have some wine. It's like, no, I'm not drinking. He's like, oh, you're pregnant. It's like, no, I'm not pregnant. You're driving. Like, no, I'm not driving. I don't drink. And then his face was like, his face just dropped. And he felt so uncomfortable. And I was like in a bit of a thing, so I couldn't be bothered to kind of save him. So I was just kind of ignored it and talked to someone else. But that's actually quite a common, they don't know how to deal with it. And also another thing that happened on that night, it was like, because I love to dance, and it was like a really good DJ, and I was dancing away with one of my friends, and the next day my boss came to my office, and she was like, oh, how's your head? And I was like, oh, totally fine, I said. And she was like, I was like, no, I didn't drink last night. And she was like, oh, but I saw you dancing. I was like, yeah, you can dance even if you don't drink. So it's like it's hard for many Scandinavians to understand that you wouldn't jump on the chance to have free drinks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right. That's just
it's not a done deal.
Yeah. And so you feel like an outsider as a sober person, or does it bother you? How do you process that for yourself?
I kind of quite like it, weirdly enough. I like to be a bit different. I always have my whole life. So it doesn't bother me that people ask. And it didn't bother me neither that he was kind of perplexed about it. I guess what I would wish for maybe was that people spoke about it more. Because sometimes I think, well, it probably is only me then here in Sweden that has a drinking problem, and I'm a woman, you know. But obviously that's not the case. But it sure feels like it. So that I think is a shame, that we are so kind of guarded. But then again, we are guarded about a lot of things. It is a very kind of stoic nation, so to say. We don't show emotion very easily.
Yes, I have a cousin. My husband's cousin moved to Finland, and
they are big drinkers.
But they have quite progressive attitudes towards recovery. They don't really see it as a sickness. They see it as something that needs to be addressed and dealt with. But he says there's definitely no small talk. You don't do small talk.
No.
So coming from a culture that is, quite guarded and stoic, and there's a lot of stigma and taboo around addiction and recovery, you made your way to a She Recovers event in LA in September. I believe you traveled alone, even.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And so that was a brave thing to do, and I'm just wondering, did you feel like you were on another planet to be in a room of 500 yeah. women jumping around talking openly about the changes we've made? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was totally overwhelmed by that experience. I think I just about recovered from that night in a good way. Absolutely, just in a good way. But yeah, as you say, I was very, very taken aback by how open people were. And I remember like one of the first women I spoke to, and she kind of really laid it out on the line, what she had been through. And I was like, oh my word. But for me, that's, it's super refreshing. Like, that's why you're here, you know? And I felt, I think everyone was really super nice, open, lovely. And I felt, I didn't feel, weirded out or anything like that. I just felt calm in a way and kind of chilled because I knew that I didn't have to deal with, because I was there before the gala dinner. I was like fretting, like I wasn't thinking straight, and I was thinking, oh, I hope it's no alcohol there, because what am I going to do? And I was thinking, no, hang on, this is a sober event, go on, you don't have to worry. And just those kind of things is like so nice, because it makes me realize how much I think about these things, like, oh, is it going to be alcohol, where is alcohol going to be, is it going to be free, that was kind of taken out of the equation completely. And that was just that, and that everything is kind of geared toward recovery, and all the books, and it's just positive, like, affirmations. I was totally, like I say, overwhelmed. I was like on a high for like the next, I was on holiday the week after in California, and I was like just like flying around, like, you know, and it really kind of cemented my belief that this is, I'm doing the right thing. That I am where I'm supposed to be. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, because also that's, sometimes that thought sneaks in that, you know, I wonder if, you know, if I had a glass now, how would that be? You know, like sometimes I can start to think like that.
Yeah.
And being at these events, you know, kind of, yeah, so say cements my feeling that, you know, no, you are, this is where you're supposed to be, really. This is the path for you. And that's nice to kind of get that confirmed.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's a really good feeling to just be with people who understand you. You don't have to even explain a whole lot, just to know, oh, these people, they know what it's like.
And exactly.
To feel not like an outsider for a few days to be...
Yeah, that's so cool. That's amazing, And... yeah, I mean, I'm still in touch with some people, some of the girls I met there, and, you know, just, and I think it's just so nice when you, I put up on Instagram that I had my, like, 3 years anniversary last week, and, you know, I get, like, oh, great, well done, Tina, you know, like, from people I met there, and that to me is, like, really cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was an experience, it really, really was, it blew me away.
If you could take parts of that home and make changes in your own community, what would you like to see different? If you could wave a magic wand, not that you would be responsible for doing it, but if you could just wave a magic wand, what would be some of the things you'd love to see?
I think the, like I touched upon earlier, like that we are a bit more open about having issues. I mean, something that has come out more and more in Scandinavia now is we talk more about mental health, because that was, again, something that was like not talked about at all, and suddenly everybody was really struggling and nobody kind of, oh, you know. So things are changing here. Mental health is one, and that's a lot of talk about that. There's a lot of, you know, talk about mental health in young people and things like that. But I'm hoping that we can be as open about alcohol abuse, you know, and drinking and things like that, or even, you know, just take a look at the way we do drink here, because the culture is very geared up toward party hard and drink hard. And, you know, it's quite uncommon in Scandinavia to drink. I mean, if you drank on a Tuesday, people would look at you like you're a freak, but if you don't drink on a Saturday, you're an even bigger freak. So, you know, it's like I wouldn't have fit in either way, because, you know, at the end I was drinking every day. I think, and also it's like a big kind of, you know, you turn 18, oh, you're 18 now, you know what that means, you can be drunk, blah blah blah, and you're like, yeah, you know, it's like the whole mentality in Scandinavia is party and alcohol is like goes hand in hand, you know, it's like intertwined. And then, you know, binge drinking, it's a result, it's huge here. So it's like a bit of, it's like skewed. But I would hope that, you know, maybe in a few years that we would just be more open about it. Because I think, you know, I think it's as prevalent here as anywhere else. I can't see it not be, really. But at the moment, it's still, we have a way to go, unfortunately. And also, you know, there's not many options for where you can go and get help. You know, it's either, you know, you don't have all those like smart, or is that what it's called? Like, you know, a bit like alternatives to...
There's a number of programs here, Smart Recovery and Refuge Recovery, and do you have 12-step meetings, AA meetings there?
Yeah, you do. So that's what my only option would be, but it's so far that it's, you know, it's not feasible. But I also think, like, you know, to have here, if you go to rehab, kind of very dire. I mean, that's in people's eyes, then you're really that bad. And I met in LA, I met a lot of women that had been in recovery and spoke about that very openly. And that to me also is quite new. because if you say that here, that's pretty bad. If you've been
I've really found that to be quite interesting too. Since I've been talking, I guess, constantly to people in recovery, is that it's really come to me. It seems like we're more willing to talk, not only talk about rehab, but a lot of women talk about it as being such a wonderful, life-changing experience. I have a pre-recorded episode coming up next week that includes a conversation with a woman who stayed 18 months in rehab and then went on to volunteer at the sober house for years after. And she, I asked, like, oh my gosh, why so long? And she just said, it was wonderful. So that's something that I feel is new. Maybe I just wasn't listening or getting past my own mindset before.
I haven't heard that about that either. But that's cool, though. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah. Do you think in your industry that there might be any appetite for spreading information or sharing insights about this sort of new recovery advocacy movement? It seems to me that there's sort of a novelty to it. In some cultures where, what are your thoughts around that? Would you be willing to open that conversation?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I'm a little bit on the fence, but I'm leaning to doing it more than not doing it. I think, as I said, like, we don't have this kind of fora here in Scandinavia. I think, as you say, it's very much a novelty, absolutely. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this the other day because, I mean, I haven't done, like, any service, you know, like giving back or anything like that. So I have been thinking about it, maybe getting something going or opening the conversation more.
Well, that is exciting.
Yeah. It just means that because I don't blog, I don't do anything like that. So I'm kind of out on my Instagram account, but like on Facebook and stuff, I'm still not kind of super open about it. So I just need to be okay with that before. But I think now is the time, actually. Yeah.
I don't know if you, do you know who Elizabeth Vargas is? She wrote a book. She's a broadcaster here in, or a journalist in the U.S., and she wrote a book last year called Between Breaths about her lifelong struggles with anxiety and her several times to rehab and subsequent recovery. But she says that, you know, while she was struggling, she was continually producing episodes and segments about women in recovery and women and alcohol. Because she was so fascinated by the topic and she sort of wanted to talk about it but couldn't bring herself to deal with her own issues and was sort of using her job to work on it herself. And now she talks quite openly and is quite an advocate about it. But there's certainly some interesting models here in North America that could give ideas for how it's done.
No, I mean, definitely. I mean, it's silly not to, I mean, it's, yeah, I thought she'd do it. Thank you, Gina.
If it's right for you, only if it's right for you, no pressure.
No, but you're right. You're absolutely right.
Do you worry that you would suffer any professional repercussions by talking about it?
No, not at all. If people ask, I'm very happy to talk about it. On the contrary, I think, I don't think that would be an issue. I think a lot of I am a master of creating a lot of drama in my head. So I think I'm probably making it bigger than it it has to be. It wouldn't have any bad repercussions for me at all, really. I don't think so. I mean, you never know, but I doubt it. No excuse.
Well, we'll look forward to finding out what you do next. Oh, and, of course, I'll be helping you promote your project here on the Bubble Hour when the time comes. So you just let me know.
Keep you in the loop.
Let's talk about this three-year anniversary you just had. Did you mark the occasion in any special way? I guess you could say there's a big party for you every year because it's New Year. So.
Yeah, exactly. I have decided that every time I have done previously, every time I have a sober anniversary, I get a new tattoo. So I'm getting a new tattoo next week to celebrate.
Well, tell me about that.
I don't know kind of how it became, how it got like that, but I think just after getting sober in 2016, I kind of had to, you know, I did a lot of crazy things. Part of my drinking, because I loved beer, as we all know, beer is full of calories. So my last kind of 10 years of drinking, I gained a lot of weight. I thought that when I quit drinking, that would all just by a miracle, I would just shed the pounds. That didn't happen, unfortunately. So I decided to, and I'm not sure that was the best strategy, but it worked for me. I decided to also that into 2016, I decided to lose the weight. So I kind of could focus on something else than not drinking. And after I'd lost, this is in kilos, but 20 kilos, I'm not sure how much that is in American.
I'll convert it. It's a lot in pounds, but let me just do the conversion. I'm Googling with my thumb. Keep talking.
I shed that, and I wanted to mark that because it was kind of like a new me, really. So I marked that with a tattoo, which is the Latin word for being in the moment, which I have issues with. So that's now a permanent reminder on my wrist. That's kind of how it started. So the next year I did actually, it's like a circle. And at the time, I actually did it. Now I'm going to sound like a stalking freak, but it was kind of like reminding me of a bubble. So like, so I have that also tattooed with Jean on the deep. No, I'm just kidding.
I want my name on your arm.
So that's
Let me back up. 44 pounds is how much she lost. 44 pounds.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's a toddler. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You must have felt like a new person without all that extra weight.
It was amazing. And that kind of spurred me on not drinking as well, because, you know, that kind of not the sole reason, but, you know, it did make me think twice about picking up another pint or picking up a pint, all the calories, because I know that's how I gained it in the first place. So that year was, you know, was a massive change for me. And also, like, weirdly, after I stopped drinking, I kind of came out on the other side. Suddenly, I feel like a completely different person. My interests have changed super weirdly. I used to hate yoga, for example. I scoffed at it. I laughed at my friends that did it. Now I have a good friend that tried to, you know, get me to go so many times. And I was like, it's ridiculous. I'm much rather sit in the pub, you know, and I'll meet you afterwards or, you know, whatever. And lo and behold, last year I graduated and I'm now a yoga instructor.
So like, you know,
wow. Yeah. And also, like, you know, running a half marathon, I would like, again, just laugh at the thought. So that's kind of one of the strangest things that I feel has happened after I stopped drinking, that I've kind of, Or maybe I've gone back to what I really, truly was like before I started drinking. I don't know, but I am very different. My interests have totally changed.
You know, it's funny you say that because I have a friend who says she hates the word recovery because she's not sick. She's like, I was not sick. I don't need to recover. I'm not a patient. I'm not ill. Mm. And I think of recovery as we're recovering who we used to be. We're uncovering
that young woman
that got lost in all the layers of BS that the world dumped on us and that we bought into. So it's funny you say that because, you know, you say you said you were 10 when you started having panic attacks. And it's almost like all of the coping strategies that you tried to self-administer over the years had to be, like, peeled off so that you could get back to her and get back on track again.
Exactly. And to me, I think that was actually kind of shocking that I kind of woke up as a different person. Not, you know, like the way I, like, you know, in the, you know, not deep down, I guess, but, you know, all these kind of new interests that have kind of seemingly come from nowhere. But you know, it's like, and actually some of my friends have said, oh, yeah, you know, it's cool, like, you know, you're into that now. And you remember when we were young, we used to do this and you really loved it. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. I actually would love to play poker, you know. And it's like, it's so weird that, and it's kind of scary that you lose parts of yourself. I've never really thought about that until quite recently when I was looking at this registration form for a half marathon, and I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So far from where I was, say, 5 years ago, you know.
You know, I have a theory about yoga and people that hate yoga, which I used to as well, is that we can't be still with ourselves. We can't, we don't want to face ourselves. And yoga is way too quiet and way too slow. Mm. And we're almost addicted to busyness as a form of distraction, is how I think of it. Right, as a sort of self-numbing thing.
Absolutely.
And once we get well, we can start to enjoy things like yoga because we can tolerate ourselves and we're not afraid to be alone with our thoughts. Does that ring true for you?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I just remember thinking when I was still living in England and I was working a lot and all that kind of thing. And I remember thinking like being busy for me was almost like a sign that I had made it, you know? Being busy was... reaffirming to me that I was popular, I was liked, I was good at my job. So I was bloody hell in, or skip mind my French. I was, you know, traveling every weekend, I was seeing friends. I liked, you know, to plan, like I'm going to go there, then I can do that at the same time. And then, you know, I was kind of getting really into that being busy was meaningful to me. And I see now that, again, that was kind of another coping mechanism for me because then I didn't have to, you know, think about what was really going on. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you get rewarded for that, you know, at my job, you know, they give you more work or they give you, you know, like, important work. And then you feel like, oh, yeah, I'm really good, I'm great. And it kind of it spirals out of control. And it certainly did for me. You know, when you come home and you crash on the couch and all you really can do is, or you really want to do is to have a glass of wine or sit. Mm-hmm.
Stop feeling everything.
Exactly.
You know, I also found too, when I was addicted to busyness and achievement and accomplishment and was that nothing was ever satisfying.
No.
Like I never enjoyed anything I did, I just like moved right on to the next thing. And because I just felt I would never felt safe. Like you're doing it to try to feel good enough, but it doesn't work.
No.
And it's almost stressful because as soon as you accomplish one thing, oh shit, now I'm not busy. So I got to find something else to do.
That was me in a nutshell. It really was. And, you know, you could have this massive promotion. I got promoted and they were like, oh, congratulations, you must be so happy. And I was like, I hardly you know, I hardly recognized it because I was just like on to like, oh yeah, okay, but that means this and this means that, and now I have to do that. And, you know, it's like you can never, yeah, as you say, I never really cherished what I achieved because, yeah, I wasn't really in that headspace to do that.
So do you feel like it's hard to maintain sort of enthusiasm and motivation now without that mindset, or are you still busy but just more satisfied? How would you define it now?
I think if I wanted to, I could go back to be as busy. And being a freelance, again, it's something I have to be very careful about because if I wanted to, I could work a year without a break. And, you know, it's hard to say no when you're asked and things like that. So the whole kind of self-care thing is super important for me now. I have to make sure I have a break in between projects, you know. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Not so much that I feel like I want to drink, but my state of mind is not great. I also have kind of, for me, I think I've found a formula that works. So if I get my exercise in, you know, 3 times a week, that is my saving grace. Mm-hmm. It really, really sorts my head out. So I think I need to be hard on myself. And that's another thing that I've been struggling with. Like, and I know you've spoken about on other Bubble Hour episodes about, you know, self-care. And I was very much, and to a certain degree still am, that self-care is selfish, you know? And especially like, say, over Christmas, and I wasn't really feeling it, you know, didn't want to see people. And I was like, oh, come on, you have to do this Christmas. And actually, I had to say no, because I had to take care of myself. And that, for me, is very, very, very hard. To this day, it's something that I don't feel 100% good about it. But I know that if I don't do it, I'm not going to be good for anyone, anyone around me or myself. So that one is, for me, that's a hard nut to crack. And I think I need to work more on that because I easily feel like, oh, you haven't done anything today. You've just been, you know, I measure my time very much by what I've done, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
it can't be anything, you know. If I wash the house or clean the house, then that's great. Then, you know, my mission accomplished. But if I haven't done anything, in my book, haven't done anything, if I've just been reading, for example, that's really not up to par. So that is my biggest kind of Achilles heel, I think, when it comes to recovery. And that's a work in progress. But
it sounds like you're hard on yourself, your inner critic,
so.
Still
yeah.
active.
Yeah.
But yeah, it also sounds to me like you're in a really good place. Like you sound really content.
Yeah, I am. And that's okay, because that was another thing, you know, like if I felt too happy before, that was very bad. So I'm glad that I can kind of be proud of my recovery, because that's another thing. I often play it down. If people say to me, "Oh my God, 3 years, that's amazing," I'm like, "Yeah, well, you know, it's hard, but it's not, you know, that hard." And I have to be more kind of proud of it, because it is. If I look at it from an outsider's point of view, it's like incredible, really. Me or
yeah.
other people, you know, that was always the instigator for all things drinking, that I can now say that I haven't had touched a drop since, you know, 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, we just have a few minutes left, so I want to ask you, I'm like 100% certain that there are listeners in your neck of the woods that don't know you and you don't know about, but I mean,
yeah.
I can see the stats. I know we have listeners all over the world.
Cool.
So don't worry, listeners, I can't tell who you are. I just get a little map with numbers on it every once in a while. So what would you say to, by way of encouragement, to someone who is either locally in your area or just feeling isolated and feeling like they're not very supported by their community or their culture or the people around them? Do you have some words of encouragement or just how to get started for them?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, you are not alone. And it's very easy to feel like that, especially, for example, where I live, which is super remote. If I can do it, anyone can, I would definitely look things up online. And it's so much stuff out there now. And obviously, of course, Bubble Hour, my saving grace. But also, you know, in Scandinavia, we have this, there's not, you don't really have, you know, can I say like Amazon? You don't have that. But you have similar things, and I've ordered a lot of books on there. People in Scandinavia know what I'm talking about. and you get all kinds of books from all over the world, and you, all the kind of sober books and all the kind of famous books that we talk about on the Bubble Hour and other fora online, you can get them all from there. So it doesn't mean, you know, even if we are far from everything, it feels like sometimes, as you say, there must be, or there are others around. We just need to, I just need to figure out a way to connect us. but I think the most important one is that you're not alone, even if you feel like you are, and even if, you know, even if you don't dare to tell people that you're not drinking, you know, it's, I don't know, it's so worth it. And together we can do it.
Yes, I love it. If listeners want to reach you, is it okay if they email me and I forward it on to you? Does that work for you?
Absolutely, not a problem.
Okay, listeners, if you would like to send word to Tina to thank her for her interview today, ask her any questions, or if you are in Scandinavia and want to try to meet up,
yeah,
whatever, your
so
reason.
Cool.
But that would be so cool. I'm going to come visit you, so you'll be hearing from me. Anyway, listeners, you can write to thebubblehour@gmail.com and let me know that your message is for Tina, and I will forward it on to her so that she can reply to you. I want to thank you for doing this. It was so cool. We met in LA at a little event that we had for people that were traveling on their own to the She Recovers event. And so I came to that, and you were there, and I was like, what? You came from Sweden by yourself. Like, you got the prize for the whole event, in my opinion. That was so cool. And it was just really lovely to meet and to see how our lives connect, you know, around the globe. And
incredible. Really.
So I immediately asked you to do this, to do a show, and I'm really, really happy that you did. And so cool to connect it with your third anniversary. I didn't realize that when we booked it. So that's really great. And before we go, so what is your, when are you getting your next tattoo, and what's it going to be?
My next tattoo is actually next week, and it's my biggest to date. So I'm a bit apprehensive. It's a stag's head. I often kind of make them mean something to me. So I think the stag is also for like strength and change and things like that. But also for me, it's like, I love nature. Where I live now, there's a lot of stags around. It's kind of like a manifesto or a proof that I've come really, really far. I haven't decided where to have it yet, though. So the jury's out on that, but it's going to happen.
I love it. Okay, well, send me a picture when you get that. That's so cool.
We love it.
Okay, well, just stay on the line a minute, Tina. I'm going to just say goodbye to listeners here. Don't hang up. So, everyone, I've been talking with Tina from Sweden. Again, if you'd like to reach her, send your messages to thebubblehour@gmail.com, and I will make sure that she gets them. As I said, you can hear my story or read my story over at unpickledblog.com. We talked about She Recovers and the She Recovers retreats. Their website is sherecovers.co. There's a few spots left for Mexico, November 30th to December 6th, I think, 2019. I will be on that retreat. So So if you would like to come to Mexico with me, go to SheRecovers.co and sign up for that Mexico retreat. Tina, I'm talking to you as well. And I guess that's it for me for this week. We'll be back next week with more episodes. So until next time, everyone, take good care.
Own it, I did that, not proud that that was me, and when I face it, I take that, a little dignity, not looking for excuses, I just want to be free from power, weakness head on me. In a dark corner is where shame. Oh, you think you're strong just 'cause you keep it all inside. It just stays and waits there to rob you of your pride. Turn the light on, turn the light on. You can shine when you say, "Oh, I did that." Not proud that was me, and when I face it, I take that a little dignity. I'm not looking for. I just want to be free from power. Oh, head on me. You don't have to shout it out on Main Street to be clear. You don't need to whisper to confession every year. Person you should talk to is looking at you in the mirror. And the one who matters most can always hear when you say, "Oh, not proud that that was me." And when I say, "I take back a little dignity," I'm not looking for excuses. I just want to be free.